You must have loved Keith Tkachuk. Did you ever you get your claws into maybe acquiring him somehow, some way? What a player.
Yeah, we almost had a deal with St. Louis to get him at the end of his career, my first year in Anaheim. And my second year in Anaheim, it was no, it was first year. And the problem was budget. He made too much money. We couldn't fit it under the budget. And our owners, wonderful owners, the Samuelis, they were like, we won't interfere in a hockey deal, but what does this do to the budget? And we couldn't make it work. So we almost, I almost had him at the end.
Was that the year he went to Atlanta?
He ended up moving, I think, yeah.
Oh, wow. Yeah, what a player. Oh, so we'll talk to him. All right, so there's the number. Most people have weighed in on it. I'm fascinated to hear you. You know any negotiation. Nobody's a big winner. Nobody's a big loser with a contract. You look and go, they both gave something here. Matthews gets to unrestricted free agency faster, and right now it's a lower AAV for the next couple seasons.
Yeah, I'm not sure I'd buy the lower. I mean, I predicted 2 months ago that the saw-off, the cutoff that would get these deals done, not just Austin Matthews, but all of these RFAs, Tkachuk and Liney and all these guys, would be that they'd sign for less than 8 years. And so this is not news to me. And again, I hate when people go on TV or radio and say, I told you so, but I told you so.
Like, but this here was, you are.
I don't hate it because you're saying it. I hate it less that you say it.
So, to me, I'm not surprised it came in. I am really, really, really surprised, in fact, amazed that it's 5 years. I envisioned a six-year deal. So, this, to me, it's I don't know how this makes sense to anybody on the management side.
That's a big win for Matthews to get there that much earlier, a massive win in your mind. If you're his agent, you're thrilled it's five, not six.
Five is, I mean, I want to know how they're going to keep him after 5 years. I know, first off, my understanding is they made this deal a week ago and just for paper getting it all done. And to me, the difference in Austin Matthews' play has been visible, that he's got this gorilla off his shoulders. He's been much better the last three games, in my opinion. I really like the way he's playing. Second, I don't think the money's far off. Once Connor McDavid got what he got, you're in this range. But they bought 4 years of Connor's unrestricted rights.
That's right.
For that cap hit. So you say it's a lower cap hit, but if that's the price tag that he's got, you buy 1 year of UFA, I don't know, given the tax structure in Ontario, how this guy stays one more day after 5 years. I really don't.
Leafs fans want to hear.
Pardon?
That's not what Leafs fans want to hear.
Well, I don't get paid to tell them what they want to hear.
That's fair. Okay, so I'm kind of interested in the fact that you said he's kind of playing with a monkey off his back, and some people had alluded to the fact that he looked a little bit distracted or not as quote-unquote all in as we're used to him seeing. But on the other side, you have Mitch Marner, who's playing out of his mind. And why do you think that this is not something that's burdening him? Is it because he has nothing left to lose and the way he's playing it goes up and up and up? Or is it just a personal kind of preference for each guy? They handle things differently.
Well, I don't know Mitch Marner. My guess is, I sense from watching him interviewed, first off, he is not talking to the Leafs, so there's no weight. There's nothing to evaluate. There's no, should I take this offer, should I not? They're not exchanging proposals till after the season. So he doesn't have to deal with it day-to-day. I sense he's a kid that it wouldn't trouble anyway. And the third thing is, after yesterday or whatever, 2 days ago, when Austin signed, guess what Mitch is going to get? Guess how many years he's going to sign for, folks? Anyone?
Five?
Anyone? 5 years.
5 years? Is that going to be something we're going to see with all these RFAs then? Is that going to be the goal for them?
No, I think you're going to see teams fight much harder to get it to six.
Mm-hmm.
And I saw yesterday, Brian Burke, by the way, joining us. I don't understand the people who say, well, now, I mean, there's no incentive for Mitch to wait till the end of the year. And let me stop those people. And you might agree, disagree. I'd love to hear. If I'm Mitch, I'm leading the team in regular season scoring. And someone might say, yeah, but you played more than Austin. Yes, I have. Thank you for noticing that I've done that for two straight years. I'd like to lead the team in playoff scoring as well. And I'd like to go to the table in the summer. And maybe we win a round, maybe we don't. But I'd like to go to the table as the leading regular season scorer and the leading playoff scorer. And then we'll start talking about my five-year deal, right?
Yeah, not just that. You got to worry about an offer sheet, too. Like, the offer sheet is going to be, I think it's going to rear its ugly head this summer. I don't see it with the Leafs so much, but I see it with a couple other teams. who have cap trouble and star players and RFAs. But you add 11.6 to the cap hit, and you start doing your work and plugging these players in. Tavares at 11, Matthews at 11. This guy, if Marner goes in, it'd be at least the same number in my mind. And all of a sudden, you got, you know, four guys making $10 or $11 million, or three at 11, and whatever. It's pretty hard to see how that's not unwieldy from a hard salary cap perspective when you're going to have to re-sign Jake or replace Jake, which is a $5 to $6 million hit. So I don't know how this works. I know the term, and people are really excited about getting Austin Matthews signed, and so am I. And it was great to see him smile like that yesterday, because he sure seems like a good kid. But to me, this is a really dangerous number. Five is a really, really dangerous number. And, you know, as I said way back when, they needed to win the fight with Nylander. And they didn't. And that kind of the precursor to this deal, where they, in my mind, on the term alone, the player is a huge winner. And then now they've just handed, they've turned and said, okay, but it's your turn. So what do you think he's watched? He's watched two guys come in and manhandle the team, and I don't get it.
So two quickies on Darren Ferris, his agent. Two quickies. One, Brian, you're Darren Ferris, or you're Mitch's agent. Let's not make you Darren Ferris. Kyle calls you and says, hey, how about we start talking? You're like, no, the answer is the same. You say that, don't you?
Yes.
Right. We talk at the end of the year. Second thing, he talked in the Toronto Star yesterday. Here's his quote for our listeners. So far, they've been trying to lowball him. That's the reason we've come to this point. I'm sure you've had your battles with agents. I'm sure you've had your supportive moments with agents. That's not your day to do that. I guess you're operating in terms of your client, but those two players are friends as well. I equated it to getting engaged at somebody else's wedding. You just don't do that. You got a lot of days in the next several weeks and months to throw your bombs at the Leafs, to me.
Well, you don't want to get engaged anyway. What the hell is that?
Well, not if it's an open bar. No, I didn't.
Wise.
Yeah, no, that's, you can make a big mistake. Bridesmaids.
What has it
otherwise
got to do with being on someone else's wedding? I know what you mean. I don't think that these millennials don't care about stuff like that. They all want to get paid. They want to see their buddies get paid. They don't worry about salary caps. They don't worry about whose day it is. It's
different. Does Mitch look at what Darren said and be like, good. Yeah, good. Get that. Or is he, like, sometimes I'm sure a player seems mortified that an agent said something, but maybe not. Maybe not with the Scott Boris's and the, who was the next question guy, the Terrell Owens guy. I can't even remember now. Can't even remember the agent's name.
I remember him. I know who you're talking about. I did a panel with him. He spoke at a seminar with me, Drew Rosenhaus.
Drew Rosenhaus, yes.
And then I was expecting to hate him, and he was amazing. He's smart, funny.
That's what
he
I've
was
heard.
Great.
Yeah, charismatic. I think that Marner's agent saying that the Leafs are trying to lowball his client is kind of obvious. Don't you think when you enter a negotiation and you know you're against a hard cap that the number that you're going to come in with is going to be lower than you expect to pay someone?
Yes, on most teams, that appears to be the MO.
So why is he acting like this is going to be a big surprise or fuel the fire when it just seems to be regular standard negotiating practice?
Yeah, I don't know. I don't know this agent. Like, Darren Ferris is a good agent. I haven't done player contracts in years. I don't think it's a good use of the GM's time. Mm-hmm. So in other words, if you're going to spend, there's so much wasted time on contract negotiations. I let Dave Nonis do all the contracts here after my first year. So if you're going to spend a contract of this magnitude, it might take 200 hours. And I'm not exaggerating. It might take 100. Well, 100 hours where you could be on the phone trying to make trades, or you could be scouting. So I don't think it's a good use of GM's time. I did all the contracts for Pat Quinn in Vancouver. Pat did two in 5 years. I did all of them. And I said, Pat, it's not a good use of your time. If you can wrangle with an agent for an hour over a no-trade clause or try and get us a defenseman that'll help us, that's a better use of your time. So I don't know Darren Ferris because I've never done a contract with him. I hear good things. This now, to me, though, is just, it's kind of I don't think he's going to talk to them until after the season. I don't see any reason why he would.
No, there's no motivation for me to do it. We'll get to the hockey team in a sec. God, it feels like forever and a day ago they traded for Jake Muzzin, and he's played three games here. It's weird. But negotiation-wise with Marner, Kapanen, Janssen, now that Matthews is done, yeah, it's a busy summer. Do you look and go, the problem isn't the upper-end guys, and you might relate to this. Great GMs, Lou Lamoriello, Ken Holland, and they all can probably relate to this. Sometimes the problem is what you're paying a third-line center or a fifth defenseman. They look like they have an issue, Brian, with Patrick Marleau, 6.25, and Nikita Zaitsev's 4.5. That's about $11 million, just under $11 million. I can't see a damn thing they can do with Marleau. And the optics of, and I know he's got a no movement clause anyway, but it's the optics of doing anything with Marleau are awful. I think we've talked about this before. It'd be an awful look. He came here to win. So you're about to win. You have to support him because he came here to win. He chose you.
Yeah, I agree with that. And also, you go to try to sign another free agent who's advanced in years if you mess with this guy. So I agree with that. And plus, he's not killing him as a player. He's a good player. People, it's like I said about Louis Erickson in Vancouver. People are mad at him. I'm like, you're not mad at him, the player. You're mad at the contract.
That's right.
And Patrick Marleau is a quality guy. He's still producing quality minutes. And when a player gets overpaid, I tell this to people all the time, don't get mad at the player when he gets overpaid. That's our fault. That's our fault. So imagine your son comes home and says, Dad, I think I'm only worth $4, but they offered me $5. What are you going to say to him? Don't take it, son. You're going to say, don't grab a pen. Get down there. Get a speeding ticket on the way down there. And so it's our fault when a player's overpaid. Patrick Marleau is a wonderful, wonderful person, and he's still an effective player. The other guy is more of a problem, and it's exacerbated by the arrival of Jake Muzzin because now it's going to push him down and push his minutes down. But I don't know what to do about that one either.
Yeah, Muzzin is interesting because I had figured that he would come in here and gel pretty well. But as Greg said, it seemed like he's been here the whole time. And one of the things that I do like about him is that he is physical. He is aggressive, but he does it in a smart manner. And one of the things that I was seeing on Twitter a lot was, does the arrival of Jake Muzzin and the style of play kind of change the way that the Leafs play? And for me, I was like, no, it doesn't. Jake Muzzin isn't going to cause other Maple Leafs to be more aggressive. But am I wrong in thinking that? Is he leading by example? Teammates seeing him make a big hit, changing the momentum of the game, feeling the energy of the crowd, does that give them more I guess incentive to kind of emulate that style to the best of their ability?
Well, it yes and no. So, okay, step back. First off, the buildup on Jake Muzzin has been disproportionate to what he brings. I love this acquisition. I think this was a great pickup, but he's a defending defenseman.
Yep.
His first priority is to defend. He's an elite defender, an elite penalty killer. The rest of his game is just okay. Now, I still think it's a great acquisition because you need defenders to win. And he is physical, and he's smart. The reason his penalty minutes aren't high is not that he doesn't hit. It's that he hits intelligently. He has good discretion about where he hits. So you're far enough away from the boards, you're not going to take a penalty, this type of thing. And he doesn't fight. He can fight, but he doesn't like to fight, so his PIMs aren't big. So people say, oh, he's not physical. He is physical. And he's a good first-pass guy. He likes to go D-to-D too much because he played with Doughty for so long. But he likes to go D-to-D too much, but he's a good first-pass guy. That was a great acquisition. But he's going to inspire guys with the odd big hit. Now, he's played three games, and I think he's got two big hits.
Yep.
So it's not like he's got a hit parade going, but I think it does put courage into your team when a guy nails people on other teams. I still think this physical play is something that the Leafs have to address before the playoffs.
Well, you want a cup with Corey Perry. The guys have been trying to hit him, knock him into the next planet for the last 25 years.
By the way, I had guys way, way, way tougher than Corey Perry dressed. So Corey was protected on that team.
And yeah. Even when Muzzin laid out Corey Perry, it turned into a scoring chance.
Well, yeah. I watched a lot of his games with the London Knights, and fans would try and climb the glass to lay a hit on Corey. That's how amazing he was at getting under opponent's skin. So they lose last night to Montreal, and I wanted to bring that up. I know you were talking about Pete Chiarelli last week. Have you, in your time, you mentioned before, Brian, sometimes you see the vulture. Sometimes you know, GM, coach, even a player, you see the end. Mark Bergevin has gotten himself right off the mat, like right off the mat, and Claude Julien's done a phenomenal coaching job. Did you see even a partial element of this coming in the summer when there's all the problems with Pacioretty. We don't know what kind of goalie Carey Price has been. He's done an amazing job. It's an amazing season for the Habs.
Yes, he has. And you know why some of the GMs, all of the GMs are so excited? Because Mark Bergevin is extremely popular. The other GMs really like Mark Bergevin and really respect him. He's funny. He's smart. He's a great guy to do anything with, to have dinner with. He's entertaining. You go watch hockey with him. He's smart. So, and Montreal's such a tough market because you're stupid twice. You're stupid in French and you're stupid in English.
Yeah.
So he's bounced back after taking a savage beating. He's bounced back and they're playing great. And no one is doing anything but applauding. Like, every GM around the league is like, good for you, Bergie, good for you.
By the way, so as we wrap, someone's enjoying our segment here and they text us in, what about putting Patrick Marleau in the front office? Brian, you won't get these questions in Carolina or St. Louis or Dallas. You won't.
No, that's Toronto. And I love living here for that reason. But the cap hit doesn't go away if they put him in the front office.
I feel an assistant to the assistant to the assistant GM won't clear 6.25 million next calendar year. I feel that.
No matter how many contracts you help out on.
Brian,
and he's still playing
well.
He's
fine,
People can get mad 100%. At the contract, but he's still playing well.
Brian, if he's making 4-5, no one's saying anything. You had Leafs players here. You know, if Francois Beauchemin's making X, if this guy's making X, nobody says a damn word about it. Nobody.
Yeah, Louis Erickson in Vancouver's the best player. Nice player, great kid, making too much money. And then they're turning on him, and I'm like, it's not his fault.